And welcome back to the August 1992 edition of the National Radio Club DX Audio Service. I'm Fred Vobey here in a temporary studio with a two-track machine. And in the background, you can probably hear Bruce Williams. I'm sitting here kind of going over some plans for our construction while listening to Bruce's show on WCIT 940. But we're in temporary quarters on this edition because tomorrow they come in and lay all the carpet in the studio area. Then we get the wallpaper hung up, and then comes the electricians, and then the carpenters, and hopefully within the next 30 days we're going to be in a brand new facility, which is all finished off, and should be nice to get into some permanent quarters for a while, so to speak. But it's been fun working here in the little sheetrock announce booth with a two-track machine, a cassette recorder, and another machine balanced on top of that. So hopefully we can get out of here real quick. I'd like to make mention and thank you to the members who have called and wrote concerning are wondering about how we fared through the storms, which you probably heard on national news that came through the western part of Ohio. We did not sustain much damage other than a few roof leaks, which we're going to take care of in the next 30 days and get a new roof put on the house. But basically, the storm split into two parts, went north and south of us. The most damaged areas were Mercer County, Ohio, around St. Mary's and Salina, and then down into Wapakoneta, into Logan County by Bell Fountain, and down into the Columbus area. They sustained most of the damage, and it was a serious storm. I can relate to one kind of interesting story, and that was our amateur radio group was doing storm spotting on that night. And I was standing outside, and the winds were coming out of the west by about 20 miles per hour, and it was kind of a humid night, and all of a sudden it got real cold, almost like, you know, what you'd expect if you open up a refrigerator and have all that cold air dump on you. And then the wind was out of the east suddenly. Needless to say, I looked around for a funnel cloud and didn't see anything, but I decided to go in and maybe come out a little bit later. As I came out about 10 minutes later, and it was still out of the east, and the only thing I could figure is that the front moved through just at that particular time. But it was a little tense. Many of our amateur radio operators spotted funnel clouds. There was at least, I would say, 14 sightings that I know of funnel clouds in the west central Ohio area. And in fact, one of the operators over at the TV station who was working with the Boy Scouts of America, they actually had a funnel cloud run through their camp up in Defiance, Ohio. So it was a tense evening, to say the least. And I hope I don't go through that again for a while. Sadly, we lost one resident in west central Ohio due to the flooding, a small child who fell in the water. Luckily, there was no one else, which was quite remarkable considering some of the damage. And I do have to send out some condolences to Mark Gearhart, fellow engineer here in the Lima area. He's the chief engineer for WIMA 1150 and WIMT 102.1. His FM site was severely damaged by the storm. Lightning did some big destruction to their lighting system on their 1,000-foot tower, as well as one of the antennas on the FM transmission system. So, Mark, hang in there. We know how that goes when those storms move through and just completely tear apart a broadcast facility. Luckily, we didn't sustain any damage there at the TV station, and I pray that it's not going to come convention time. Speaking of which, we're going to have convention details in just a few minutes, but right now, let's turn it over to that tall, sandy-haired guy who will probably be at the convention, and you can see him in person and shake his hand and get his autograph, because after the law catches up with him, he's going to be in jail. Here's Phil Wayne. Just kidding, Phil.
Hi, DXers. Phil Wayne here with another Market Scope, the pre-convention edition. And we're continuing our scan up the FM band in Jacksonville, Florida. And now with one red-hot tuner, here's Randy Jones.
95.1 many years ago was owned by the city of Jacksonville, WJAX. At that time, the station for many years was only owned from 6 p.m. to 12 p.m.
Until midnight.
18 hours, and then in the late 70s, they went a 24-hour format. The city sold the station to private enterprise in the early 80s, and various formats were tried here. Easy listening, an oldies format, an urban format, and 5 years ago, WAPE moved to this frequency, and on the night they were moving, I caught the last ID of the old WJAX.
This is the X, WJAX-FM, Jacksonville.
1986, 5 years after the temporary halt of the legend, there is new life.
After years of confinement, an energy force has become unstoppable in its return home. WAPE-FM.
The Big Ape.
Power.
Power.
95.
Boyle Dempsey, returning Monday morning to...
And 5 years later, here's how WAPE sounds.
Jam it, Jacksonville's most hit music.
Power 95 WAPE.
For many years, Beautiful Music was located at 96.1, the old home of WKTZ, which we covered earlier. In the mid-80s, WLCS took to the airways, and we actually have the beginning of WLCS.
WLCS Class 96.1 FM, good evening. This is Jack Diamond. A thrill and a pleasure, to say the least, to be back in Jacksonville on a great new radio station. A little confusing in here this evening. There's champagne flowing, caviar hors d'oeuvres, a lot of excitement here at the new WLCS Class 96.1 FM. Not only is it great to be back in Jacksonville, but great to be back at a radio station that promises to be everything that Jacksonville would like a radio station to be. This is a unique opportunity, not only for myself, after 17 years in broadcasting, but for you, those of you who are listening right now, a chance to mold a radio station almost like clay.
The station went on the air as a adult contemporary station, and it stayed on about 18 months, and it changed to Jacksonville Soft Favorites, WEJZ.
96.1, Soft Favorites with fewer interruptions. Favorites, Light 96.1. Do That to Me One More Time from the Captain and Tennille. Just before that, it was BJ Thomas. We also had a soft favorite from Natalie Cole and Nat King Cole, Unforgettable. And a few songs back, a song made popular by the soap opera General Hospital, Herb Alpert's Rise.
96.9 is Jacksonville's oldie station, Cool FM, WKQL. Took this format of New Year's Day 1990. Prior to that, it was WAIV. And would you believe WPDQ was here for a while? And originally, in the original call in the mid-60s, when the station took to the airways, WRLJ.
96.9 Cool FM makes holiday dreams come true with Cool FM's annual Christmas Wish. Mail your Cool FM Christmas Wish in a letter or on a postcard to Cool FM, 6869 Lenox Avenue, Jacksonville, 32205. This year, make a difference. Bring joy into the life of someone you love or someone less fortunate than you. Make a Cool FM Christmas Wish and make a dream come true. Cool FM's annual Christmas Wish. It's from all of Santa's helpers at your oldie station, 96.9 Cool FM.
AP Network News. I'm Adrienne Mattil. Terry Anderson heads back to the U.S. soon. The former hostage will take an overnight flight from Germany to New York. This is AP Network News.
96.9 Cool FM.
When some loud bragger tries to put me down,
96.9 Cool FM, WKQL, Jacksonville's oldie station. 96.9 Cool FM.
This comes now, Sam, morning, morning.
Ooh, baby. 97.7 finds in St. Augustine, WUVU, 3,000 watts. The station began broadcasting in the mid-60s as WFOY. They simulcast many years with their AM. In fact, most of those years they came on in the afternoon at 3 and signed off at midnight, eventually went 24 hours a day. Now we find them as WUVU with an easy listening satellite delivered program. However, in the last couple of weeks, this station was sold by the owner to Todd Communications out of Clearwater. And a couple of years ago, this station applied and I believe received permission to move their tower and transmitting facilities to Jacksonville and go to 97.9 and get into the Jacksonville market with 50,000 watts.
Tell friends about us so everyone can enjoy Easy Favorites. Anytime you hear your favorite songs, it should be without all the talk or lengthy commercial interruptions the other stations give you. Our promise is the most music.
35 years ago, WQIK began broadcasting on the AM band with a country format. In 1964, they took to the air at 99.1. And there were about 27,000 watts at the time, mono. Later on, they upgraded to 100,000 watts, went stereo. They've simulcast from time to time, did separate programming, but they have, through the years, retained a country format.
Another 12 of today's hottest country hits are coming up next. We're on the way here with Clint Black, Better Man, and also Davis Daniel for Crying Out Loud. Some big news there on the music scene. It's 1:45 this morning, and let me remind you that Saturday night, December the 28th, FM 99 WQIK, we kicking off Gator Bowl weekend on the Jacksonville Riverwalk with the annual Boat Light Parade, a free concert. That's right, I said free, from McBride and the Ride, and a giant fireworks display. It's all choreographed to music broadcast on WQIK. And it is all absolutely free from Allied Discounts Tires, the Jacksonville Tourist Development Council, and your concert leader, FM 99 WQIK.
And now, at least 12 songs in a row, followed by our exclusive No Talk with triple Play with a lot less talk from your 12 in a row hit kicker, FM 99 WQIK.
In the mid-70s, 99.9 became the home of WIYD Palatka, Florida, which is a small town just southwest of St. Augustine. They came on as an easy listening format. They later became country, sold to new owners, moved their tower and their studios, moved their tower between Daytona and St. Augustine, their studios down to Daytona. And they became North Central Florida's Y100. They were WNFY, had some controversy with the Fort Lauderdale station using that same slogan, so consequently they changed their call to WNFI.
I-100 means money and music. Hey, it's Adrian now with the wrapping up 55 minutes of nonstop music. Gonna roll it all over again in the next hour, Natural Selection, EMF, and we'll kick it off with Firehouse.
WNFI, Palatka, Daytona Beach.
100.7 used to be WGIG in Brunswick. For a few years, it was WBGA in Brunswick. Now it's the home of WOKV News Talk and simulcast with WOKV AM. Actually, WOKV AM and WOKV FM and WKQL, the oldie station, I believe, are owned by the same company.
Tomorrow night, Stanley Carno is here. And don't forget Friday night, our year in review show. Our new stations this week, KNHN Kansas City and CJCA in Edmonton, now takes us live all the way. We're heading over to Duke Zebert's for stuffed cabbage to take us there. Here is Satch.
Baby, take me down to Duke's place. Wireless box in town is Duke's place.
WOKV AM 600 and FM 100.7. Do it for Mom. WOKV AM 600 Jacksonville and WOKV FM 100.7 Brunswick. Together, we are Jacksonville's news stations.
CBS News, I'm Donna Paniak. The Mideast peace process is due to resume in the morning.
101.5 in the 60s was a country station owned by Southland Radio, WYNR. Served South Georgia with a country format from Brunswick. Later, they became WPIQ. And about 3 years ago, they actually moved their tower further south into North Florida and their studio facilities into the Jacksonville market. Today, they're known as WHJX.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your co-pilot just turned on the fasten your seatbelt sign. I'm afraid we have some rather unsettling sound effects ahead.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, you're as welcome as can be.
N-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E.
Brian, you really got it going on.
The frequency, 101.5.
The call letter,
WHJX. The station that jams, Hot 101.5.
Hot 101.5, registered and documented as the official $101,000 hot cash station. Good morning, it's 206, B. Brian inside your radio. Keep it locked in to win.
101.9 jams out of Daytona. I'm not sure of their current call. Previous calls have been WQXQ, WDOQ, and they came on the air as an easy listening format in the mid-60s as WMFJ. Since they don't talk much at night, I don't have this station recorded, but they're identical to the format you just heard. 102.9 is Y103. They play a mix of today's music. They originally started in the 60s as WEBL, and in the early 70s, they changed their call letter to the current WIVY.
Y103, the right music mix, flashing back to 1965.
Satisfaction. No satisfaction.
Jacksonville's Y103, the right music mix, not too hard and not too soft, with the promise of a new day. Here's Paula Abdul.
104.95 is the current home of WFYV. This station started in the mid-60s as a 3,000-watt station in Atlantic Beach, which is just northeast of Jacksonville, as a WAQB. And then later, WJNJ, and then it was sold out, moved from 104.9 to 104.5, and went to a power of 100,000 watts.
Hey, this is Bill St. James. Be sure to join me this and every Sunday morning from 8 till 10 for Rock 105's Flashback. This week, it's a flashback to 1975.
The policies of the Nixon Ford administration have plunged America into the worst economic crisis since the 1930s.
And there's nothing better, particularly my fancy, than getting an eyeful of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Your name is Arnold Horseshit. Your name is Arnold Horseshit.
Saigon. Franco dies, and Jimmy Hoffa gets misplaced. It's 1975, this week on Flashback. Flashback. 2 hours of the original Rock 105 lost classics and songs you can't hear anywhere else in town. Sunday mornings at 8 on Jacksonville's home of classic rock, Rock 105.
105.5 is the home of WSOS in St. Augustine. It started in the early 80s as WMKM.
This isn't Jacksonville. This is America's first city. And this is St. Augustine's new star. Star 105.5. St. Augustine's radio station. The new Star 105.5. WSOS.
Randy, we're out of time, so you're welcome back next month to finish up. For the DX Audio Service, I'm the Omaha-bound Phil Wayne, hopefully. And now, here's the guy whose motorhome sags a bit to the right, from all those cassette decks and tapes, of course, John Bowker.
Historical Moments in Radio. Hello again, everyone. This is John Bowker, and today we're going to continue excerpting comments from the book American Broadcasting, a source book on the history of radio and television by Lichty and Topping. Now, to set the scene for this month's installment, we have to go back to the early and mid-1920s when the Department of Commerce was regulating broadcasting, and they were frowning very severely through Herbert Hoover, the department's secretary, on the use of commercials to fund radio broadcasting. In fact, they had said that the only people they wanted to have radio stations were the educational institutions, because that would be the primary use of broadcast radio. Now, the text in the book goes on as follows. The early prediction of high stability for educational stations backfired after 1927 when the new Federal Radio Commission ordered stringent restrictions on equipment. Nearly 100 educational stations went off the air that year, unable to finance the new electronic requirements. And 50 other stations also left the air rather than meet the requirements in 1928. Other regulations or station operations required by the new FRC said that they had to broadcast only on assigned frequencies and during the hours specified in their licenses. This was all new to the broadcasters starting in 1927. But the FRC pressed on, and using the latest census figures from 1920, they set up 40 clear channels, one station on each of the clear channels operating at 50,000 watts in the United States. They also had 35 channels with two or three regional stations scattered around the country and operating at perhaps 1,000 watts, and six local channels with station powers ranging up to 100 watts with 25 stations scattered around the country on each local channel. This plan, of course, was never completed. But it had put the fear of God in the stations. The increase in stations was very gradual from that point on, from 700 to 800 between 1927 and 1940. But technological changes were occurring during this period, too. Power of the stations gradually increased, particularly in the regional-type stations. As many as 100 stations operated with 5,000 watts by 1940. And other changes occurred during the 30s. The number of daytime-only stations increased markedly, and the number of stations sharing time on the same frequency in the same city decreased during that period. And at least one directional antenna was introduced for use in 1932 in Tampa Bay, Florida. An experiment using 500,000 watts by WLW in Cincinnati was abandoned in 1939 after 5 years. The idea was technically sound, but caused considerable economic objection from competing stations. But then in September of 1940, there was a radio conference held in Havana, Cuba, of all the Western Hemisphere countries, and it resulted in 777 of the U.S.'s 862 radio stations having to change their frequencies from 10 to 30 kilocycles in agreement with the Havana Treaty. Of more immediate significance that year to 33 licensees in the big cities was a ruling by the FCC that had owners divest themselves of all but one AM station in a market. Up until then, owners of stations could have several in the same market. Now, parenthetically, we should comment that in 1992, it's been agreed that owners can own many stations in a single market. But this goes back to the 1940s that we're talking about here. And the text continues, the Federal Communications Commission was already aware of the concentration of control of the media and had proposed that newspaper publishers be barred from station ownership. President Roosevelt, whose second term was opposed by most newspapers and who had used radio to go directly to the people to be re-elected, also decided that the FCC should bar newspaper ownership of stations. This was politically savvy. The commission adopted such a rule, but reneged after heavy congressional pressure. Of course, during the period 1940 to 1945, the whole world was at war. But the U.S. government allowed several stations building permits as essential industries during the war, and by 1945, there were over 950 stations in service in this country. Stations had been asked to decrease their power about 10% during the war to conserve power for other industry. But after the war, the FCC was flooded with requests for station licenses, and in a period of 2 years after World War II, the number of radio stations had doubled in the United States. We'll talk more on this subject next month. For Historical Moments in Radio, this is John Bowker.
Well, it's time to fill you in on what's going on with the National Radio Club DX Convention, which is going to be held in Omaha, Nebraska, DXCon 92. Registrations are arriving for Big O, Omaha. That is NRC Convention in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, if you're interested in sharing a room with another DXer or want to carpool to Omaha, contact your convention host, Ernie Weslowski. Spelling of last name is Weslowski. At the following address, 13312 Westwood Lane in Omaha, Nebraska. Zip code is 68144-3543. The registration fee is $40, which includes two meals. Make your check payable to National Radio Club. Hotel reservations go to the Days Inn at 3001 Chicago Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68131, or telephone area code 402-345-2222. You must mention the National Radio Club Convention to receive the special rate of $46 plus $7.52 tax per night. Registration deadline is August the 11th. So far, about half are arriving on Thursday evening, September 3rd. Yes! Mr. DX himself, Ernie Cooper, has registered. Lots of auction items and door prizes are planned. We'll need your phone number for a security check for one of our tours if you're planning on going on those tours. And, of course, be sure to keep your dial parked on KNRC AM at 640 and WNRC FM at 99.3. And KNRC TV Channel 4 will be there, so bring your portable radio and TV. Brush up on all those Nebraska stations for the DX quiz. Yeah, you will talk a long time with your prize, believe it or not. Send or bring auction items anytime, postpaid to your convention host, Ernie Weslowski. Tours and two main meals are in the works for a guest speaker. BYOB beer and pop are provided. Good Amtrak service is available from Chicago and Denver. Same for airline with a free shuttle from 7 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. to the Days Inn. See you over Labor Day weekend in Omaha, the Big O. Your Omaha team, Ernie, Bob, Carl, Kern, Dan, Mike, Neil, and Skip all hope to see you there at the National Radio Club Convention. And be sure to keep your needle notched on the big one. AM 640, FM 99.3. We'll keep you informed.
And hello, everyone, on the DX Audio Service. Ken Onischuk back here with a sports update. And when I don't get one time, I get another time. It's time for AAA Baseball update here. American Association teams that I've been able to gather: Buffalo Bisons, 930 WBEN, Indianapolis Indians, 100.9 WIRE, Louisville Redbirds, 970 WAVG, Nashville Sounds, 1430 in the suburbs. Western Division, the Omaha Royals, 1180 KKAR out of Bellevue. Denver Zephyrs, believe it's 1090 KYBG, unless they change these things at the last minute and switch to another station. Oklahoma City 89ers, 1340 KXXY. Iowa Cubs, 1390 KKSO. International League teams I've been able to find out. Syracuse Chiefs, 1390 WFBL. Columbus Clippers, 1460 WBNS. And Richmond Braves, 910 WRNL. Pacific Coast League teams available. Vancouver Canadiens on my Sox AAA affiliate, 850 CFVR out of Abbotsford. 1520 KFXX does the Portland Beavers, and the Tacoma Tigers on 1180 KLAY. Southern Division of the PCL, Las Vegas Stars, 1460 KENO. I love those call letters. Tucson Toros, 1330 KMRR and 98.3 KXMG. Phoenix Firebirds, 1360 KNNS. Albuquerque Dukes get the powerhouse, 77 KOB. I'm not that good of a singer anyway. Okay. And finally, a few of the Arena Football League teams I was able to find out if I missed last time. Phoenix Rattlers, 620 KTAR. Detroit Drive are on pass cable only. Cleveland Thunderbolts, 1300 WERE. The Charlotte Rage are on television only, which is kind of strange, and that's about it. Next time around will be the... National Football League will be starting up exhibitions in August, and by next time around, I shall try to have a full lineup of all the stations, because I know there are a few changes going on. So, enjoy your summer, and I hope to see you all, try to, at the convention in September. Take care, friends.
Well, as you may notice, we're a little unorganized on this particular edition, and it's not as snappy as the past editions of the DX Audio Service, and that's because this whole issue is being put together between a cassette machine and a reel-to-reel machine in temporary studios as we get everything put together for our new home away from home, should I say. And in fact, my wrist is going to be killing me tonight because we just got done putting up a whole ton of shelves for all the tapes and everything that we have in the studio, as well as some trim pieces on the ceiling. Got the ceiling painted yesterday, and all I can say is I got about another week's worth of woodworking to do, and a lot of painting and wallpapering, and you name it, it's gonna get done, I'll tell you. But we're kind of unorganized on this particular edition because of our lack of equipment. So I guess we'll just kind of sit back and basically take it as it comes, okay? From our DXChange column, for sale an ICF SW20, great sensitivity on AM, fair and good on shortwave and FM. $40 plus UPS. And to obtain that unit, you might want to contact Jeff Lewis at 1028 West 41 Place, number 3, Kansas City, Missouri, 64111-4090. Or you can give him a call at area code 816-931-5632. Grove Enterprises has brought out its international call sign directory, I'll get it out, for shortwave and scanner listeners, which includes worldwide list of NDBs. It sells for $25.95 plus $4 UPS from Grove Enterprises, Post Office Box 8098, Brasstown, North Carolina, 28902-0098. Or you can give them a call and ask about this product and other products at area code 800-438-8155. So often we've mentioned some of the things up at the National Radio Club Publication Center, but we've really never gone into the catalog. And what you may not know is that there's a lot of different items that the Publication Center has in stock for you. And if you're looking for a few interesting things, I'm just going to kind of go through some pages here while we have this opportunity on the DX Audio Service and kind of fill you in on a few interesting books. Beverage and Long Wire Antennas, Design and Theory. Now, this manual is a compilation of numerous articles on the subject of design and theory of beverage and long wire antennas, which have appeared in the DX News magazine for a number of years. Now, they are available all under one cover. If ordered separately as reprints, you'd spend about three times as much. So, if you're a serious DXer and serious about designing your beverage or long wire antenna, this book is for you. It's designed to enhance the antenna reference manuals, Volume 1 and Volume 2. It's on 5.5 by 8.5 booklet format. Contents, analysis of the beverage antenna. Part 1 is basic theory. Part 2 is two-wire phased antennas. Then we have the Florida beverage, the care and feeding of the wave antenna, or good beverages don't always come in cans. Nice title. Also, a non-resonant long wire remote from earth ground, the super signal snatcher. Addenda to the Super Snatcher article, and a look at beverage from the other side of the world. This is from Coulomb Beach, 1983. Also, the Loop Antenna Design and Theory book. Now, this manual is a compilation of numerous articles on the subject of design and theory of loop antennas. The articles appeared once separately in DX News magazine or are still available as reprints, but now you can get them again all under one cover, such as multi-rod ferrite loop antennas, roll your own, loop antenna theory and practice, loop antenna theory and practice number 2, loop distortion, why get skewed, pattern controlled loops for the medium wave DXer, the hot rod, an inexpensive ferrite booster antenna, the large aperture ferrite core loop antenna for long wave and medium wave reception, and high precision directional finding of medium wave sky wave signals. We also have another interesting book, which is a favorite amongst DXers, and that is Getting Started in Medium Wave DXing. Now, this booklet is designed to assist the novice DXer in the pursuit of the hobby. It includes introductory articles on foreign and domestic DXing, as well as the other related topics. Included are articles on reception reports and safety and prevention maintenance of your DX gear. All new members who join automatically receive a copy of this book. So if you are joining the DX Audio Service or National Radio Club, be sure to remind them to send you Getting Started in Medium Wave DXing. National Radio Club's 50th anniversary book is still available. It's over 200 pages on the history of the National Radio Club, as well as broadcast band and broadcast band DXing. Includes many, many photos, drawings, QSLs. If you want to know about the history of the club, then this book is the one that you want. If you want to know how DXing was in the early days of radio, then this is the book you need. It's 8.5 by 11 inch in size, bounded book, that is. If you're a member of the National Radio Club DX Audio Service at all, well, you need to get some stationery. Stationery is available, and you can show your letter recipients that you're a proud member of the National Radio Club, and those come in on white sheets with black ink. Also, reception report forms are available. So if you're tired of poor station returns, you can get 20 to 35% increase in returns by using these pre-prepared report forms available in English, French, and Spanish versions with 50 sheets. I mentioned about the antenna reference manuals, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Now, here's what's in Volume 1. This manual is a compilation of numerous articles on the subject of antennas for medium wave DXers, which have appeared in DX News magazine from 1969 to 1974, and it's in one handy volume. It includes data on air core and ferrite core loops, antenna tuners for long wave and beverage antennas, along with coupling devices. It's a 5.5 by 8.5 booklet format. This is the original manual available for several years. Contents include the National Radio Club FET as metal loop antenna. I'll get it up. Tips on loop construction. Thoughts on FET loop construction, one transistor loop antenna, direct coupled loops, broadcast band DXers beverage, antenna tuning devices for long wave on the medium wave broadcast band, alternative methods of air core loop amplification, National Radio Club 2-foot loop, HQ tries the space magnet, the space magnet, how good is it, modifications to the space magnet, degenerative loop, an excellent antenna coupler, and balanced and unbalanced loops. Then in volume number 2, this manual is, again, a compilation of numerous articles on the subject of antennas, this time from 1974 through 1981 in one handy volume. It supplements volume 1 of the antenna reference manual. Its contents include WIP antenna coupler for portable receivers, Radio West loop versus the space magnet SM2, the wedge loop that is, the Harley loop antenna, AC power supply for FET loop antenna, FET loop amplifier with coaxial output, a good loop is easy and cheap to make, floor stand and mounting arrangements for loop antennas, more thoughts on beverage antennas, practical phased beverages, more on phased beverages, antenna phasing, phasing unit design modifications, and phasing unit construction and use. There are also a couple manuals on receivers, and if you happen to pick up an older receiver, you might want to get some information, and that is on receiver reference manual number 1. This is from 1969 through 1974. Contents include redoing older receivers for medium wave reception, the Drake SPR-4 review, the Lafayette HA-600 review, comparisons of the Collins R390A and R388 receivers, the realistic DX-150A and DX-160A reviews, Hallicrafter's SX-122A review, capsule review of the Hammerlin receivers, random thoughts about receivers, how to live with a budget receiver, receiver hot rodding hints, and modifications to Hammerlin HQ-150 and similar receivers. In number 2, volume 2 that is, you can find out about receiver hot rodding hints, modifying the realistic TRF for 10 kHz readout, modifying realistic TRF for use with the space magnet, a real external antenna jack for the realistic TRF, tilt T-bar antenna tuner for the realistic TRF, more tips on modifying the TRF for 10 kHz readout, selective modifications for the realistic TRF, S-meter for the TRF, receiver comparisons, what do they mean, DXers review of the Hammerlin HQ-180 series receivers, more comments on Hammerlin receivers, Drake R7 reviews, realistic DX-300 review, GE Super Radio review, Panasonic RF-4800 review, GE Super Radio revisited, Panasonic RF-2200 review, Panasonic IF and RF alignments, Sony TR-6500 versus realistic TRF, Sony ICF D11W receiver, Sony ICF 3900W receiver, Sony ICF S5W receiver, and 4 reviews on the new realistic TRF model 12-656. Now, this booklet, which I have, is available for only $1 from the National Radio Club Publication Center, and I just read you a few things out of this booklet, which is literally 35 pages of information of things that you can purchase from the National Radio Club's Publication Center. Remember, any product that you purchase from the National Radio Club's Publication Center goes to help support the National Radio Club and thus keeps the dues down for all you members, and that way we don't have to charge an arm and a leg for every edition of DX News Magazine or the DX Audio Service. Support your club by buying products from the National Radio Club, and we'll support you with all kinds of interesting information and things. Well, that just about does it for this edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. Boy, I'll tell you, it's been an interesting day here. Like I said, we just got done doing a bunch of woodwork out in the studio. Myself and my brother-in-law put the shelves up today, and now comes the time to go out there and start staining them down with some oak stain, and as soon as that gets done and dry, start moving tapes, then we got to build a couple stands for the racks. Oh, boy, there's just all kinds of work that's going to be done. But the one nice thing, I guess, I look forward to is the fact that after it's all said and done, we'll have a nice new home to move into, very pleasant surroundings, and pretty much what you'd expect a broadcast facility to be. And it's going to be a pleasure doing future editions of the DX Audio Service out there in our brand new studios. And hopefully we'll be able to get something done either before convention time or by the end of the year. So what I can do is take some pictures and also maybe put together an audio cassette for the visually impaired members to describe exactly what our studio looks like. Hey, don't forget, speaking of which, don't forget that After Dark number 3 is coming up. And we need your comments. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to make, particularly questions, just be sure to put them on a cassette and send them to me here at DX Audio Service headquarters. And be sure to ask the question. Say it like, you know, hi, this is Fred Volby, and I'd like to know, what kind of things do you like doing in your spare time? Or something like that. Send them to us at the DX Audio Service. Hope to see everyone at the 1992 convention. I'm planning on going unless something happens that changes my plans at the last moment. So I'll see you at the National Radio Club Convention out in Omaha. Look for me as well as Phil Wayne and a few other DX Audio Service members and editors. Until next time, this is Fred Volby in a cramped little studio saying 73, good DX, and please, Scotty, beam me out of here.